Russia's invasion of Ukraine is continuing to devastate civilian areas in an attempt to demoralize Ukrainian forces. Ukrainians in Aotearoa are calling for the New Zealand government to do everything it can to sanction Russia, as well as offer military aid and humanitarian assistance. I got to speak with Ukrainian student Veronika Orekhiviska, who is studying in Auckland. In our interview, she gave a personal account of growing up in Ukraine's capital of Kiev and shares what the war has been like for her friends and family who live there.
Could you tell us a bit about your connection to Ukraine and where in your Ukraine you're from?
Okay. So I was born in Ukraine and I was raised in Ukraine. So I consider myself an Ukrainian. I moved to New Zealand 5 years ago and I'm 23 right now. So like 18 years of my life, I lived in Ukraine. I was born there. My parents were born there. My grandparents were born there. So we're Ukrainian. My closest family is here. My dad, my mom and my brother is here and my aunt is here. But all of my friends are in Ukraine, all of my aunts, all of my classmates, all of my, like, everyone is there. And we're just trying to check on them, like, constantly. And I'm from Kyiv. It's, like, the capital city of Ukraine. And it's, like, the harshest fighting are in Kyiv right now. So if I were there right now, I can even imagine what would happen.
Yeah. And what was it like for you growing up there?
So the Kyiv, I love this city with all my heart. I miss this city every day because it's the mix of modern buildings and older buildings. So like when you see the Kyiv on the main street, you kind of like feel this like old European like heritage, old European culture. But I know from my friends, because I have so many friends from other cities of Ukraine, it's like when you're from capital, people think that you're like, you think that you're better than everyone because it's capital city. I don't know if every country has this, but my friends from other cities, they would say that Kyiv is very big, it's very loud, it's very multicultural, so many foreign people, so many foreign students are there. You can go in the streets and you hear Ukrainian language and you hear Russian language and you hear English language and you hear like, I don't know, Chinese, Japanese language. It's like the multicultural all of Europe, I would say. And it's really big.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe in Aotearoa, people in Wellington might think they're better than everyone else.
Yeah, so we have kind of, I would never think that I'm better, but I would have this feeling when I would visit other cities that like it's not big enough, even though I'm sure I weren't in all parts of Kyiv. I lived in one area and I studied in one area, but again, when I visit other cities, I'm like, oh, that's not too, it's so small for me.
So I was wondering if you could give us a bit of a background for people who might not be aware of the history between Russia and Ukraine.
It's really tough to generalize the hundreds of years of history. So first of all, we've been neighbors with Russia all hundreds of years. I'm sure that if there is really a Russian person, they would have another opinion on that matter. But me, as a Ukrainian person, lived and born in Ukraine, we always felt like we're younger brothers and sisters of Russia because it's so big and it's so powerful and they have like dominated media, our media, they dominated our language. And Russian people say that we are all brothers, that we are all nation, that we are all like one people, and we are not. Because we have like we're different countries, we speak different languages, we have different culture, and I don't think that people who speak different languages and sometimes can't understand each other that they are one nation. It's not logical. It doesn't make sense. The story of this particular war started 8 years ago. So we had a president who was pro-Russian, and like we all knew that, and we saw that he's not interested in Ukrainian people when his government stopped signing agreement with the European Union. They just stopped this process, and students, it's all started with students, because like students are the most active and like most compassionate people. Students walk on the main street of Kyiv and just start peaceful protesting. The government didn't like it, and they started to beat students, and people start protesting because of that. They didn't want students to speak up, so they started to order policemen to beat them up in the night when it's dark, when it's cold. And people started protesting against that because our own government started to beat up their people, their students, because of that. And so it started to escalate because people started protesting, and they beat them up again, and more people started protesting. And it's all, the peak of all of that was when there are so many people in Maidan, in main square in Kyiv, in the heart of Kyiv. So you can't even see the street, you just see the people. And one day, I remember it vividly because I was at home and we had like live video from Maidan. And one day they started shooting peaceful protesters. They wanted to scare people, they wanted to shut them up, and they started shooting people. And more protesters were fighting because of that. And more than 100 people died, civil, normal people, not military, not soldiers, died because of that. It escalated so much that our president ran away to Russia. And there were time in Ukraine when we had no president, kind of no government, because our president ran away to Russia. And because of that, because we were confused, and there were no president in our country, the Russian, I would say, government, because not all Russian people agree with the Russian government. The Russian government took advantage of that and just invaded Ukraine. And it was 8 years ago. So they invaded Ukraine, they took the Crimea, they took the two regions of Ukraine. And since then, they stayed there. And there was like, I would say, passive war between Ukrainian soldiers and Russian soldiers, because Ukrainian soldiers were defending our borders and Russian soldiers were just attacking that. And it for all 8 years, it was like, I would say, trench war, because no one was attacking anyone. They were just like shooting at each other. So many people now think, why Russian government decided to take active actions like a few days ago? Because I think they saw that we not giving up, that this is going nowhere. We are not giving up. We are not letting them go far in Ukraine. So a few days ago, he started to take active actions. Vladimir Putin, he started to actively attack people. They say that they will attack military bases, but in reality, they attacked normal people and normal cities. Like my friends, they are not soldiers, they are not in the military bases, but they are still hiding. They see the tanks, they see the bombs. So now he's attacking Ukraine, and we think that he wants to restore Russian empire by that. He wants to take over the Ukraine and then maybe Poland and all of the former countries that were once part of the Soviet Union. He wants all of that. That's why he started to threaten Europe with like nuclear bombs or something, because he sees that we are not giving up again because the Russia is big and the forces are strong, but Kyiv is still not giving up. The major city of Ukraine, they are not giving up still. And it was funny a few hours ago, I mean hours, maybe like 20 hours ago or so, someone leaked a Russian article how they celebrate the victory in Ukraine, and then deleted it because it's not true, because all of the Russian government were like sure that we will give up, because if you look at the map and you see Ukraine, and you see the big Russia, it's kind of not possible for what's going on right now, because we're still not going up. It's interesting, again, I was talking with my dad yesterday, because we were trying to figure out why they decided to do it right now. And my dad, he's like very smart, and he's much more better in politics than I am. And I wish he was here right now, but his English is so, so bad, you wouldn't understand him. So he said that because it's now winter in Ukraine and Russia, the earth is cold, and it's like, it's iced, and it's like so hard. So tanks can go and they won't sink in it, because if they will attack it us in the summer, the earth will be like so soft and so wet, the tanks will sink in it. So they wouldn't go far. So the thing that why he's doing it now, because it's winter, because it's easier for tanks to go now on the snow, because it's all making sense when you see the whole picture, and you see that it's all making sense. Yeah. And another thing that is important right now, that Ukrainian forces have only defensive guns and defensive equipment. So we are not attacking anyone. We're just trying to defend ourselves. So in conclusion, I would say that Russian government wants to restore the Russian Empire. They tried to do it for 8 years, and now they're tired of waiting, and now they're doing active actions. And now they're trying to take over Ukraine and then go far to the Europe.
Yeah, well, thank you for that explanation. There was a lot to cover there.
Yeah.
The current president, Volodymyr Zelensky, he's getting international praise for his response to this. Do the Ukrainian people have that same confidence in him?
Not my friends and not my family. He won the election, but so many of my friends and family didn't believe in him, because you have to understand, he's not a politician. He was a Canadian once. He was an actor. Like, the whole Ukraine, and most importantly, the whole Russia knows him because he was actor and he was so successful, and he had his own show for decades, I would say. I remember myself a kid and watching him on television telling jokes. And then he saw that he can do better. And because of the popularity he had, and because of the, he was kind of, I would not say powerful, but famous, because like if you're famous and you're rich, like you have kind of power, some power. He began to go to for the president, but I was shocked, to be honest, because I remember it was the day after New Year's Eve when he told officially that he is going for president of Ukraine, and I was so shocked. It's kind of impossible to imagine, but so is the war in our century. It was impossible to imagine. But now, when people see him fight against our soldiers, when people see that his family stayed here, he had chance to go to another country, but he stayed there. And now I would say more and more people are grateful for that, and more people are grateful for him, because right now he's doing the right thing, and right now he's brave. And I'm grateful for him, and I'm grateful for our people have that leader right now, because the strong leader means a lot. And I feel like he's strong. I'm shocked that he's strong. I wouldn't expect that. I didn't expect that. Something good happened, at least. We saw our president strong and brave.
Yeah, and you have many friends and family in Ukraine. Could you talk a little bit about how the ongoing war has impacted their everyday lives and their work and their livelihoods?
Yeah, so it depends where exactly in Ukraine you are. So it's not like all of my friends doing the same thing. Some of my friends are trying to go to another country, and they're trying to go to Poland, they're trying to go to Europe. Some of my friends stayed and helping. They're doing everything they can do to help. So today morning, I had a conversation with my friend. And she was like, okay, I'm doing my best. I'm working because I need, obviously need money. But I have no idea what can I do more. And I'm like, you're doing enough. You're there. You can die every minute and your life is in constant danger. And it was shocking to me that she feels that she is not doing enough. And I'm like, you are doing enough already. A few hours later, she texted me, okay, I took all of my money and I went to the shop and I bought everything I could and I just will send it to our soldiers. And I taken another family to my home to give them shelter. Some of my friends are in Kiev. The majority of time they spend in bomb shelters and sometimes they go out to eat and just go back and just sit there and wait. For those people who, when it's like kind of quiet, they immediately feel ashamed that they are not doing something. And I'm like, can you imagine how I feel here that I can't do much? I just like want to run to the Ukraine like by my feet right now and just tell whatever I can.
You have mentioned a little bit before about the disinformation that's being spread, particularly by the Russian government. So what kind of false information have you seen out there, and how does that actually compare to what is going on in reality?
It's like two different worlds, because first of all, we have family in Russia, like not my close family, but we have like uncles of uncles, something like that. My aunt doesn't talk with them anymore, because we call them and we say, oh my God, we have war, how are you feeling? And they reply to us, are you stupid? We don't have war. There is no war there. And what else can you say to the person who's in Russia and convinced there is no war? So I would say the biggest and the strongest disinformation that there is in Russia, that they say there is no war. I have no idea how they justify the things that they are going there. But there is no war. They say there is no war. They say that we are attacking ourselves. So like Ukrainian government attacking Ukrainian cities. And can you just see how ridiculous it is. On the other hand, Russian government blocks the news media who's writing the truth. They made a law that you have no right to call it war or invasion or military, something like that. They are just blocking news outlets. They're just blocking media. And there are rumors that Instagram won't work from day to day and Facebook won't work there. So there are rumors. So I would say the people in like smaller cities are fully convinced that there is no war. There's everything is fine. It's all just madness. And they upset that like some services don't work. So like people, like Apple blocks their services in Russia and stuff, and they're just upset because of that. They just, oh my God, it's so sad that I can't use my Apple Pay there. So I would say that's the biggest disinformation that is. Considering my experience with this eight years of war that we had in south of Ukraine, some people will never recognize it, because some people are truly believing their president. We also have to remind ourselves that whether in Ukraine there were like four presidents in last decade, like 15, 20 years. In Russia, there is just like Putin all the time. So there are people who were born and died and Putin was president. When it's power like this, you have so much authority. So many people truly believe what he's doing. And so many people doesn't. I see Russian activists and Russian YouTubers and Russian journalists who speak up, who tell, guys, we're so sorry. Ukraine will never forgive us for that. Our Ukrainian friends will never forgive us for that. We have to do something. Go to the meetings. Go to the Madeira Scared. New York Times were posting this. Russian policemen would took Russian people who's protesting against the war. It's against the law right now. If a policeman comes from you, you're doing something wrong. Just before we started our meeting, there is a news. It's everywhere right now, and I feel like the Western media will write about in a few days or maybe. Some children were standing with the posters would say no war in Russian, and policemen took them. Can you imagine? Russian policemen took children. For them, it's scary. Some people say, do not be scary. Don't be scared. Just go. They can't took every person. If we're all together, if we all go to the streets, we will make the difference. We will help the Ukraine. But so many people are just scared.
And just lastly, is there anything else you want to add about how people here can support Ukraine, or anything else you think they should know?
I was thinking about that. It is a shame that I can't like send a link to every listener right now.
Yeah,
but I would say just Google help to Ukraine, how to help Ukraine. And there are so many resources. There are so many charities. There are so many resources when you can donate directly to the forces or directly to the civilians. So I would say obviously be careful, because Russians also like make websites look like Ukrainian websites, and you just like donate money to the Russian forces. Try to Google help to Ukraine and try to double check the information, and maybe the government websites, all the same, it says government.ua or something like that, when the information government websites are the one that you need. The main thing I wanted to say right now, because I know that Ukrainian people won't hear it, the New Zealand people will hear it, and I would say that we can help even from New Zealand by donating, by signing the petitions, by talking to your Russian friends, talking to your Russian colleagues, what's happening right now, because it's so important. Even to my friends yesterday was like, can you post about war a little bit more, because they when they see that people speak up even from other countries, it's so inspirational for them, because the main thing is so scary that sometimes we feel like we're alone in this situation, and we are not. They are not alone in this situation, because we here can help, because we have internet, we have access to this all resources. And the main thing I want to say, we still can help, and we are not helpless, and we can make change.
And that was Ukrainian student who is now studying in New Zealand, Veronica Orekiewiczka.